You're listening to On the Same Page, a podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of On the Same Page. Thanks for tuning in to this first episode of 2019. We're thrilled to be able to offer this extra special episode to share with you. You'll be hearing a recording from the book launch party of Crozet teen librarian M.K. England's debut young adult novel, The Disasters. So we'll get into that in just a little bit, but first, we've got book chat.
All right, book chat.
Book chat.
So I just finished The Girl Who Smiled Beads yesterday. It's really good. Really heartbreaking.
Who's that by?
Clementine Wamaria. She is Rwandan by birth. She fled when she was six. So it was really interesting take on the refugee story, especially the Rwandan story, because she didn't really understand what was happening. She didn't know why they were walking all night and couldn't stop. She didn't know why people were sleeping in the river. Like, she didn't understand. And that's, I think that's an interesting way to tell a story, because at the beginning, she acknowledges, like, I was very young, and these are just what I remember, and it's mostly about remembering wanting your family, wanting to go home, like, being terrified of losing her sister, which is the only person she had, her older sister, who was 8 years older than her? 8 or 9 years older than her. So her sister's also quite young. She goes to, like, 7 countries... over the course of 7 or 8 years before she gets the chance to come to America. She's now an American citizen. She went to Yale. She's a public speaker. But it's about coming to terms with her story and especially disagreeing with how other people who went through the same thing are dealing with it. Mm-hmm. So, like, her parents and sister don't want to talk about it. Her sister feels the need to invite everybody in, even though she doesn't have any money to support them, because community is the most important thing to her, whereas she feels like they should talk about it. The author feels like it should be discussed, it should be open. You know, forgiveness is not possible, because how can you live next to these people who did these atrocious things? How can you use the same tool to harvest your crops and clear your land that was used to slaughter people? Really, really sad. I was just sad a lot. I mean, she does reconnect with her family, which is wonderful, but it's not the same. It's not like she's six and now she can be back with her mom. She's not six anymore. I think by the time they reconnect, she was 16 or 17, you know? So years and years have gone by. And she's still the six-year-old girl who wants her parents, and she's not anymore. So it was really well done. I liked it a lot. These refugee stories are harrowing, and it's, I think it's, the Rwanda story especially is one to keep talking about, because they used state media and popular media to disseminate these messages that eventually turned one group against another, and that's a terrifying thing, you know, if we pay attention, could be prevented. But we have to pay attention. It's very easy to do. It's, you know, she talks about the different genocides throughout history. She talks about the poor response to the Rwandan genocide, which it was severely delayed. The UN left the country very quickly because of the threat to their workers. A lot of processing in this book, which I think is good to have. It reminded me a lot of, what was that one I read a little way ago? How Dare the Sunrise? She was from somewhere out, Sierra Leone, maybe. But yeah, a lot of these young people who made it out, made it through, survived, and ended up in a different country, who write their stories now, getting similar stories, things you saw, things you experienced. Yeah, it was good. It was hard. She talks a lot about how she finds her body to be a burden, because for so long, like, she needed to feed it, and that was a problem. Or she needed to be quiet, or she needed to use the bathroom. And, like, these were all problematic in a lot of instances, and to come to terms with that. Yeah, and she ends up in other countries that are crumbling, too. So she ends up in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which shortly thereafter had its own problems, still has a lot of ongoing violence. That you may have heard recently, the Nobel Peace Prize winners are combating some of the practices in that country specifically that have been in practice since this woman was a young child. The Rwanda genocide happened in 1994. So yeah, she ends up going to Yale. She ends up, you know, working out with, like, the Holocaust Museum and some presidential initiatives for genocide survivors. And she goes back for the 20th anniversary, and they hold the 20th anniversary in, like, the same stadium that they brought people to. And she said it's weird because, like, annually they have, like, a day of remembering so you can grieve, but every other day you don't. We don't talk about it. It's not a public thing. It's an interesting way. And I know that there are programs currently in Rwanda that are trying to bridge that divide that still exists to some degree. Some are radio programs that just, you know, kind of built soap operas that tell people that it's okay to have different neighbors. Yeah, it was a horrible situation. But I like that she's still processing, that they're still talking about. Yeah, it's not...
I mean,
not,
she'll be processing it for her entire life.
Right, it's not, like, we have the opportunity to forget about it. And I think that's what frustrated her most coming here, is, like, we talk about it in a very clinical way of something that happened once in 1994. And she just, every time she encounters that, especially as a young Christian, she just wanted to yell at people. Like, that is not, you know, blank-faced people that you can ignore. That is me. It happened to me. You don't even know what you're talking about. That would be really difficult to be like, no, I know.
Yeah.
What a bummer.
Oh.
It's good, though, if you want to read it.
It sounds really hard to read.
It was, but I prefer true stories.
Yeah.
If I'm going to read a book that's got graphic violence or some other threat or, you know, something that happened to someone, I want it to be true. I don't want the author to be inserting violence to escalate their story.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Did you read something that was less of a bummer?
I mean, marginally. I read Pachinko by Min Jin Lee.
I do not know what this is about.
So this is an enormous family saga.
Fiction.
Yes. That starts around just shortly after the turn of the 20th century.
1900s?
Yes. You got it right. And continues through basically present day. And it starts in a small fishing village in Korea. And then there's Japanese occupation of Korea, and you follow this family.
Nothing good happens during Japanese occupation.
No, I think that this is very much... I mean, it's a story of what it means to be Korean throughout the last, you know, 115 years. And it's also just a story about what the effects of imperialism, right? So Japanese occupation, and then it becomes impossible really to continue to survive in Korea. So the family, like, and you know, one of the generations ends up in Japan. And so then I think the thing that is the most striking is that even for ethnically Korean folks, who many Japanese people cannot, like in the book, and I think probably true in life, cannot recognize as Korean by sight, by listening to them talk. It's only by hearing, like, what is your Korean sounding, but Japanese name. That's what gives them away, and they're very much thought of as other, right? So somebody who has, for four generations, been born and raised in Japan is still Korean. When they turn 14, they have to get an alien resident or registration card.
Oh.
And they can be deported for no reason. And I think, for me, as someone who grew up right in a nation where if you've been here for a generation, like, why?
Yeah.
Right. Like,
right.
You're a citizen. That's fine. But that was fascinating, and also, you know, very heartbreaking just to see, like, how much this family struggles generation to generation, and how they're thought of as less than and other, and what the first place they're really able to find success is through pachinko parlors. And so pachinko is, they call it pinball. So it's, I believe you drop a ball in the top of a machine and there are little pins sticking out. And so you're trying to get the ball to drop into something where you win money. So it's a kind of gambling.
You may be familiar with this if you've ever seen The Price is Right. We have ripped it off entirely yes. with our Plinko game.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what it's from, right? And so that's where the name comes from. But people who run pachinko parlors are largely thought to be mobsters. So there's this whole element, and it's really just... And, you know, a few generations in, you can't go back to Korea because Korea doesn't exist as a single place anymore, right? Now, right. We have North Korea and South Korea, and you don't know where your family is, where they were before. Like, do they eat? Are they still alive? You don't know, right? Like, none of this... if you go back, you risk not being able to come back to Japan, where your life is. You risk violence if you go, and you are seen... If you go to the South and you're seen as someone from the North or a Northern sympathizer, or if you try to go to the North and you're seen as a Southern sympathizer. And so that was... That's really... Yeah, that's really what it's getting into, and so it was... I wouldn't say it was a fun read, but it was yeah. beautifully written...
In the book I mentioned, she didn't talk about imperialism a lot. She only talks about when she finally learned, like, world geography, and someone was mentioning Belgium in passing, and Belgium is the original country that colonized Rwanda.
Right.
And they described it as, like, the tiny yellow dot. She's like, yeah, it's a tiny yellow dot, but, like, look what they did.
Right, yeah.
Next up, we've got a recording from the book launch party for M.K. England's The Disasters. The book was released on December 18th, and on that evening, M.K. England and mentor Sarah Glenn Marsh, the author of Reign of the Fallen, among other young adult titles, had a conversation about the writing and publishing process. And that conversation was followed by a brief Q&A with the audience. We're thrilled to be able to host the book launch party at our Crozet Library and are excited for the future success of the book.
Welcome to the Crozet Library. Yay. Thank you for coming. So, yes, thank you to the Crozet community and to the library for letting me host this event tonight. We're just going to get started. I have with me today my wonderful friend and fellow author, Sarah Glenn Marsh, who is the author of Fear of the Drowning Deep and Reign of the Fallen. Yeah. Now you can applaud us, Sarah. And Sarah's going to be my conversation buddy for today.
Yes.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. I have loved this book for a very long time. I have waited for this day almost as anxiously as you have. And
yes.
I'm thrilled that everybody gets to read it because now all of you can talk about how much you like the book with me. I want to know all your favorite characters. You can tweet to me online. I would yes. love to talk about it with you. I mean that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Sarah's been with me, like, almost since the start with this. We met during Pitch Wars, which is, like, an online writing contest, and Sarah was my mentor back in 2015.
So I'm going to jump in for a sec and say that I had a lot of submissions, and I don't know why that was. I think that I was a newer author at the time, and I think people tend to think, oh, newer authors have a lot of time. So I got the most submissions that year, and there was only one book that stood out of everything I was looking at. And I had over 100, I think I had like 160 different things to look through. And there was just this one book that stood out to me. And that, of course, was Megan's book. And I mean, because I would come back to it and I would start laughing. And the characters felt so real to me. In a good way, yeah. It's so witty. It's witty and fun. And even if you're not the world's biggest sci-fi fan, what I was actually saying to Megan before we started was that it's so accessible. You can be a contemporary reader and pick this book up and still understand everything. You know, they're not hitting you with a ton of technical terms or anything like that. It's very accessible and it's just fun. I don't know. From the first page, I was having fun. So I said to everyone in Pitch Wars, I was like, that's mine. I believe I said it's mine. I licked it.
Yes.
I was like, I licked it and I'm disgusting. Don't touch it. It's mine. So I had very strong feelings about this book mm-hmm. from the start. And I have to say, Megan, you worked so hard on revisions. I mean, we partnered on it for a long time.
We did.
So I was amazed to see how much it's evolved, and I haven't even gotten to read this final printed version, so I'm just as excited
it's
as
real
all
different.
Of you to dive in.
Very, very different
really?
From what you read. Oh,
oh
yeah.
No.
There's
I have
a
so
brother
many
now.
Questions
There's
now.
Like a whole
There's
bunch
a brother?
Of stuff.
What
There's
are
a brother
you
now.
Trying to do?
There's
okay.
brother drama. Like, Max has brother issues, like
no.
capital letters, yes.
What? Mm-hmm. Did he not already have
it's
enough
true.
To deal with them?
I mean,
just like
I took away some, I added some.
Okay.
It's fine. He's
okay.
fine. He'll
I have
be
so
okay.
many questions now. About
yeah.
Other favorite characters.
they're all still there. They're good. They're
okay.
doing their thing. Yeah.
Well, I'll be reading tonight. I don't know about all of you, but I'll be catching up.
Thanks, Sarah.
So we were how we met. I guess did we cover it all there?
I think so. I mean, I remember sitting in my brother's basement, like emailing back and forth with you, like in the week or two before Pitch Wars, and we're like geeking
we're
out about
long
board
emailers.
Games.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Geeking out about board games and TV shows and Firefly and
well,
stuff
and
like
that.
Well, our
journey actually sort of continued together from there because. Mm-hmm. I went in search of a new agent around mm-hmm. the time you got your agent
yeah.
For the disasters. And then we actually went on submission with our books at the same time. And we
yes.
had, do you remember our good luck dinner?
We went
dinner?
Out to dinner, yes.
We had a good luck dinner.
we went out on submission on
Carrabba's,
pretty much the
I think?
Same
I think
day.
We had Italian food.
It was Italian food. That's all I remember. But,
yeah. I think we were both
yeah.
sick from like the stress
we
of submission.
Sick. Yes. And then we ended up selling within a couple weeks of each other, too.
I know.
So
we had these
like,
really similar and that was with Reign of the Fallen. And
yeah.
so we had these really similar journeys with our books. And so to be sitting here with you now at the end of all of that
yeah.
is so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts the way things have come full circle with you. It's great. Yes.
Author friends are the best. They keep you sane.
Mm-hmm.
Publishing
They're
is
critical.
Not, it's not all fun. It's not all just seeing your cover and talking to wonderful people like you. So.
It is definitely a big ball of stress a lot of
yeah.
the time.
You need your team.
You
need your team. You
need your people.
So let's get started with a little Q&A between you and I before we do some audience questions.
Yes, think of questions and have them in the back of your brain. We'll come back to you.
Okay, so we're going to start with the super basic. I
mm-hmm.
want you to kind of pitch the book to everyone here. Tell us a little bit about it, because apparently so much has changed that I need to know. Tell me about it.
I think the basic pitch is still the same.
Okay.
It is about a guy named Nax who is like this close to getting his life together. So close. He gets into his dream academy and, like, has all these grand dreams to become a pilot, and then he washes out on his first day like a total champ, because he's awesome. So he is about to, like, hop on the fail ship back home and get sent back with three others when the station is attacked and everybody on board is killed except for them. And so they escape and end up, you know, crashing and causing drama and getting in firefights and then the brother drama and, you know, it's just a kind of a wild adventure from there in which they have to try and save the galaxy.
Right on. Okay. So now that you've pitched it to us, how did you come up with the idea? I would love to hear that.
Yeah. So all of my books kind of start out the same way. I have like a tiny idea seed that just kind of like comes from nowhere. It's something I'm interested in, or it's like a little piece of dialogue or something. And I have a Google Doc for these. It's called my idea dump. And I just like dump things in there as they occur to me. And then there they sit for months or years until they bump up against the right thing. And for me, the right thing was seeing Guardians of the Galaxy in the theater in summer of 2014.
Love that movie.
And just, I love that movie. It was so fun. And I was like, this is what I want to capture. Like, this level of fun, this level of adventure, this level of excitement and humor. And I just walked out of that movie theater with that idea, like, on fire. And I could hear Nax's voice finally. And once I have the character's voice, then I can go off to the races.
Perfect. So, I have to ask then. Pantser or plotter?
Oh, God. I've evolved.
Mm-hmm. Oh, me too.
Yes. I really am a plotter at heart. Like,
mm-hmm.
I have to know where I'm going, you
mm-hmm.
know, with even with the disasters, with the book before that.
Did you know how it ended from the beginning?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah,
that is the one
that.
Thing that I must know about every book before I start. I have to know how it's going to end, and I have to know, like, the emotional beat that we're going to end on.
Right. Otherwise,
like,
it can get really messy if you're not writing
messy.
Towards something concrete. Yeah.
Well, and I think it really, it's so much much more like emotionally effective for the reader. If you know what your target is, then you can really lead them there much better. So I knew the ending. I knew kind of the general sketch of the plot, but I was still learning how to write when I wrote this book. It was a messy, messy, messy draft, and it was many messy revisions after that. But like, boy, if I knew then what I know now, it would be such a different book. But you have to just not go back and reread.
I think every book is a different process, which is what I've been learning recently. Every book is different.
My second book, I used to think that first chapters were my thing. Like the first chapter of The Disasters is almost identical to the first time I wrote it back in 2014.
That's a good first chapter.
And like, oh, thank you. Everything I've ever written, like chapter one stayed intact, except for my second book that comes out in January of 2020. I rewrote that first chapter 4 times. I could not get it right.
So since you brought it up before me, I was going to ask this later. Second book, does that have anything to do with The Disasters, or is it in a whole different world, whole different thing?
Whole different world. My book deal was for 2 standalone books. So if The Disasters does well enough, then I might have an opportunity to write a companion novel. I definitely have some further adventures I wouldn't mind having with this crew.
I was going to ask you about that. Okay, good. I would love to see their adventures continue.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Do you hear that, Harper?
Yes.
Hi, okay. Harper. Yeah. Call me.
Continue, right?
Yeah. Right.
Because I said so. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go back to The Disasters, though. To your writing process, I would love to know, tell everybody, what was the hardest part of writing the book? What did you feel like was the biggest challenge? Like, maybe in the first draft, you know, when you were by yourself before you started workshopping it.
Yeah, during the first draft, you know, like I said, I was still figuring out, like, how to even write. There is a chapter with goats in it, and you will know it when you get there. That made it through all the revisions.
Did it really?
That's still there.
I'm so happy. I still have, so Megan made me this beautiful
goat. Oh, I gave you a space goat.
Yeah, it's like shades of blue, and it's this wooden goat, and it has stars on it. And so they gave me that after Pitch Wars ended, and I love it. So
Yes. So that chapter, that chapter was the result of me getting there and going, oh God, what happens next? I need something. Okay, give me a word. Sheep. No, not sheep. Goats. Yes. And I just, like, ran with goats. Because, like, now, the just the thought of that, like, makes my heart pound. Because I am such a planner. Like, I have thorough outlines. I write a full synopsis for every book I write. Like, I am an out-and-out planner. So I honestly don't know how I got through that first draft.
So, like, if I told you I need you to go back into your 2020 book and add in a giraffe, would that cause you any amount of stress?
Well, considering it's already turned in, like, the final draft is turned in, I think my editor would kill me.
Final draft is turned
don't
in.
Don't kill me, Steph.
Perfect. You can relax, right?
Yes. No. Yeah. Well, I mean, till copy edits come and I realize how bad I am at hyphens again. And lay or lie. Like,
copy edits
I get
are,
it right?
Oh, I know. So let's do a different question. Mm-hmm. Easiest part of writing. What came naturally to you with The Disasters?
I think the snark, the snarky humor and stuff like that.
That's you.
I think it's kind of, it's a little bit me. It's a little bit just like my love of this kind of sci-fi, you know, watching Firefly and Star Wars and like just kind of taking in all of that Guardians of the Galaxy-esque humor. Like, Nax is very much in a legacy of, like, hotshot, wisecracking pilots. So I think I had absorbed enough of that.
So what is it that draws you to that type of sci-fi? Because I'm also a huge fan of shows like that. What is it that draws you to those?
It's a combination of things. I love the humor. I love the found family elements. Mm-hmm. I just absolutely love it when a group of strangers or a group of friends can come together and just become that family to each other. You know, and I just think there's so much about, you know, things set in space especially that, you know, sparks your imagination and it just feels like the final frontier, you know.
And you and I were talking about how with sci-fi, with space, with the future, it's also a space for everyone, where everyone can kind of see themselves as the hero. And I love that about it as well.
Yeah, I love that about science fiction and how science fiction has always kind of led the way in terms of social change and representation in fiction, things like that. I feel like since we are looking forward into the future, no one wants to imagine a future where everything is still, I mean, maybe some people still want to imagine a future
there are
that's
definitely
massively
a few of them,
inequal
let's be honest.
And everything. But, you know, sci-fi really lets us kind of put the power in different hands and imagine a brighter future.
Yeah, I love that. All right, so let's talk a little bit more about characters. Who is the most fun character for you to write in The Disasters?
other than Nax, I think it has to be Asura. Because she is so mischievous. She is, like, the character that, like, she and Nax egg each other on, you know? Like, everybody needs that, like, person to just be like, just do it. Do the thing. Like, it's fun. Yeah.
And who is the most challenging character to write? I always find that interesting.
Yeah. I think it's either Z or Case. Z is kind of a reserved character. Like... I don't know, you may not get it from me now, but, like, I'm actually a fairly reserved kind of person, so I had a hard time kind of, like, bringing that character out of her shell a little bit and, like, really trying to show her personality to the reader.
Interesting. Z and Case are two of my favorites, so
really?
I'm interested to hear this. Yeah.
Well, and Case was just tough to write because, like, I wrote all of my anxiety issues into Case, so, like, she has a panic attack on page, and I'm like, this is super hard.
but relatable. Glad that you included it. All right, and so then on a similar note, which character do you relate to the most? I know every author puts a little bit of themselves in all of their characters in some way, because you're writing, so it's from your head. But is there someone that you kind of feel like, this is me a little bit?
I mean, they definitely all have a piece of me, but I think Case is the most me.
Awesome.
You know, she's got all of my anxiety issues. She's like the super type A, like, achiever kind of personality, which I'm totally guilty of.
Well, let's stick with this character theme, and I'm going to ask the dreaded question, and you can just take your time, and I'll try to help you. We're going to do the characters' Hogwarts houses. Just find your thing. See, they want to hear it, too. Okay.
I know. Okay. I mean, okay, so Nax is easy. Nax is obviously, like, an out-and-out Gryffindor, and there's no way around it. He just, like, dives into every situation and is like, well, we're doing this. Yeah. So, you know, he's a straight-up Gryffindor. I think that Z is really Hufflepuff. Ultimately.
I was going to suggest that.
Yes. Uh-huh. I kind of want to put Asra in Slytherin.
Really?
I do. She is so cunning and mischievous.
True.
And, you know, she really, like, she has a goal and she sets her heart on it. And she will, like, stop at nothing to accomplish her
goals.
And
not all Slytherins are evil.
Exactly. Like, hey, I'm a very Slytherin-leaning Ravenclaw. Like, I will own up to that. That's fine. A lot of my friends are Slytherins. Like,
Slytherin?
Yeah.
But I also get Gryffindor sometimes. It, like, depends on the day. The hat, Gryffindor, Slytherin. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So who do I have left? I have Ryan left. Is he it? Oh, Ryan and Case. Okay. I think Case is probably just a pretty textbook Ravenclaw.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's not much to do there. Ryan sort of eludes me because he, you know, in the book, he's that real, like, politician type. He's always got a mask on. He's always kind of, like, working to, you know, bring people together, or smooth over situations.
I would like Slytherin a little bit, I think.
I know. I think he's either a Hufflepuff or a Slytherin. Yeah.
It's a very important question to put a lot of thought into. But.
Right. We'll call him a Slytherpuff, like, TBD. I don't know.
So tell us a little bit about, I'd love to hear a little bit about the editorial process. What was one of the biggest changes you've made, aside from the brother? Because we've covered the brother. Give me one more. Like,
well,
what's something else that kind of changed
from start to finish? I mean, really, the brother comes in that, like, 50 to 75% part, which I rewrote, like, 3 or 4 times. For some reason, I just could not nail that third quarter of the book. I don't know what it was about
that.
But I just couldn't do it. So the brother really came out through there, but I think for me, my tendency is to be nice to my characters. I love them, and I just, like, want them to be happy, and I want them to be friends. And my editor was like, there needs to be a lot more friction here in the first half. Like, they gotta kind of hate each other to start with. And I'm like, okay, but it hurts. Yeah, that was tough.
That's perfect. So let's talk a little bit about, I don't know, are we doing okay on time?
We're doing okay.
I'm bad at time management, so someone yell at me. But okay, let's talk a little bit about author life, because I think that's kind of interesting too. This was your debut novel, so what's been one of your favorite aspects about debuting?
Definitely readers. There have been some early readers of The Disasters that have just been so wonderful.
I'm looking at your necklace.
Yes, a reader sent me some
cool
stuff today. I got, like, three awesome little gifts in the mail today. It's a little, like, Disasters pendant. It's very
sweet. Early excitement must be such a cool feeling.
Yeah. Well, and, like, Mike and Vicky, if you're watching, you're awesome. You know, there are a couple people who have just been with me from, like, early this year. They were some of the first people to get ARCs and write reviews and just, like, be there always online boosting me and, like, lifting me up when I'm nervous and being part of my launch crew. And just, I appreciate everybody so much who's in my launch crew. We have, like, a little Facebook group and, you know, we just, like, we chat every week and they've just been a huge, huge source of support for
me. It keeps you energized to work when things are hard, right?
Yeah. And there was a moment at Y'all Fest, the Young Adult Literature Festival that's in Charleston every year, where one of my teen readers happens to live in the area. And so she hunted me down at the festival and brought her ARC of the Disaster so that I could sign it. And that was like highlight of my year.
It's perfect. Awesome. I love it. So talk to me about, you have the most fabulous cover and you've got, I mean, it's, the book is beautiful on the, without the cover on it too, without the, yeah, it's gorgeous. The pretty yellow.
Bright yellow. Yes. Yeah, that was a surprise.
So it's a cool, okay.
Everybody
so that
goes,
was
oh,
my question
yellow.
Was going to be, yeah, I love the yellow. Anyway, my question was going to be, how involved were you in the design process?
Not very. Okay. You know, I like to let the professionals do what they're good at, you know?
Did they ask you for, like, a mood board or anything like that at first?
Okay. They did ask me, like, are there covers you like and covers you don't like? Mm-hmm. Send us some of both and tell us what you like and don't like about them. And, of course, me, I'm like, let me prepare you a 2-page, like, PDF for each of these with examples. And here is a picture from my library shelves of why I want the spine to be high contrast. And, like, you know, I did a usual me thing. Yes. And what they came up with was actually, like, not even slightly what I was expecting.
Was it close to this? Was this kind of the final product?
This was the first cover they pitched to me. And
wow, okay.
At first I was just like, I don't know what to feel. There's a cover. It has a thing on it. What do I do? And my agent texted me and was like, did you see it? Like, this is amazing.
One of my other favorite things, like, about it is the placement of the title in the helmet, in the visor. Was it like that already?
It was like that from the start.
Magic,
yeah.
Okay.
Just, you know,
cool.
The only thing that changed was really, like, the cover, the color of the cover around
it.
And, you know, there was sort of, like, fill-in artwork of a helmet to, you know, to start with. And then 3D graphics artist Philip Hodes, I think is his name, is the one who did the actual helmet artwork. And Jenna Stempel-Lowell, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing her name. She's the lead designer at Harper Teen.
Right on.
And she's amazing at what she does. She did all of the interior design as well. So major props to those. Jenna also came up with the tagline. I could not have come up with anything that good.
That is so
like,
cool.
Thanks, Jenna. You're amazing.
Well, I love it. It really works. All right. Yeah. So I want to ask you another one of those kind of fun, random questions. If
okay.
It's not too painful.
Fun,
so
random.
It's the one. Yeah. All right. So if your book and another book could collide to form one world, what would you pick? Who would you want your characters to meet? Everything's fair game. I know it's so hard.
No, it's not.
Okay.
No, it's not.
Okay.
We're gonna go new trilogy Star Wars.
Ooh.
New trilogy Star Wars. Because, Finn and Poe and Rey not need to, like, meet this crew and be best friends? Like,
oh, I really like that.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. Okay. All right. Well, do you want to go ahead and open it up to some audience questions?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Anybody have any questions? Asha.
Do Max and Ryan get together? Can you give me, like,
that's a spoiler, and I am not going to answer.
Just a wink.
Are you sure you want to put Poe and Max in the same room together?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I do. I want to see how everything explodes. Actually, they'd probably both die. They'd probably both do something, like, horribly cocky in the cockpit, and then, like, everything would explode and it'd be bad, but it'd be funny until then. Yeah.
Right. I was wondering, I know some authors will base, you know, their characters in their books, you know, it's obviously based a little bit on parts of yourself, but some authors will base it on people they know or people they see. Do you do that with your characters?
Not so much. I don't like to borrow from real life too much because I think it makes it awkward for people. But sometimes I'll take sort of the essence of somebody, like just sort of a feel I get from somebody and put them into a character. I think Azra is a great example. Before I was the teen librarian here, I was the teen librarian in Atlantic City, New Jersey for 3.5 years. And my teen advisory board from those years, they are all over the place in here. Like, Azra is really, really similar to Ozma, who is one of my teens from that time. and who I miss dearly. I miss them all dearly. So yeah, I will kind of take just like little pieces. I might take a name. Yes, some of you are showing up in the next one. Sorry if something bad happens to you. There's no value judgment associated with it. I just needed a name. Any other questions?
Yeah, Asha. So like, since I'm not very far and I have only like 3 chapters in because I started this afternoon, what do you like picture in your mind to like Earth to look like? Because like there's, from what I've read, there's not much visual of what Earth looks like.
Yeah, because they don't really spend any time on Earth at all. It's like in the first chapter and then like they're gone. So I really didn't put a whole lot of thought into what Earth was like at that time. I more thought about, like, where we're at politically. Like, there had been, you know, peace between Pakistan and India, and there had been, you know, we had addressed some climate issues, and, like, I had sort of had some surface-level ideas of, like, the political structure behind the Global Colonization Commission and stuff like that, but... since we don't spend any time on Earth at all whatsoever in the entire book, I didn't really bother to think about it that much.
I mean, all the more reason for another book where we visit Earth, maybe?
I mean,
Harper?
According to the rules of this book, that would be illegal and also a lot more fun because of that. So, yes, actually.
I know. Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. Izzy has an asked a question.
What's your opinion on fan fiction based on your book?
Pro? Like, I mean, I come from a fandom background. Like, I read and write fan fiction, like, to this day. I was reading fanfic earlier this morning. Like, please do it. I will never read it for my own book, so you are safe. Like, do whatever you want to do.
Well, I wouldn't tell anyone, but I'll read it for your book and mine.
Okay, sure.
I'm here for it. Yeah. It's fun.
In the back, Dominic.
Which character was the most fun to write?
I think I am gonna go with Azra. Nax was so fun just because I love his sense of humor and I get to be so deep inside his head all the time. But, you know, Azra is like her own special little brand of firecracker. So I think she's pretty awesome. Yeah.
When did you decide that you wanted to write a book?
When did I decide I wanted to write a book? I have always, not always been a big reader. I've been a big reader most of my life. Like most kids, I kind of went through that crisis point in like third grade-ish where I was like, I don't know, books are suddenly a lot harder. Like they have a lot more words now. What do I do? But Star Wars novels brought me into it. And I read so many Star Wars novels like up through, you know, college and young adulthood and everything. I have a whole bookcase in my house dedicated to them. And I just loved so much all of the energy and excitement, and I loved inhabiting those worlds so much, and I always wanted to write something like that, something that would give me that feeling. I would love to write in the Star Wars universe. Hey.
Star Wars.
Disney.
Yes.
Listen up. So if there were a project to come up, you know. So it really comes out of me being a reader. I always wanted to write, but my whole life I have just been, like, deeply, deeply terrified. I let fear stop me from doing everything for so long. Like, up until my late 20s, I was too terrified to, like, dance. I was too terrified to play music in front of people, which was real bad for a music major. yeah, that was a little awkward. I was too scared to do anything. I didn't like playing competitive video games or competitive board games because I couldn't stand to lose. Like, it was, like, all of it just, like, hurt me so deeply. I was finally like, this sucks. Like, get over it, you know? And I started playing more, like, cooperative games, and that kind of, like, eased me back into it. And I started writing and then sharing my work with just a couple of really trusted people. And, you know, all of that finally brought me around to a place where I could start writing for real, like, in my late 20s. That was, like, way more answer than you asked for, but there you go.
It's a good answer.
Yeah.
Do you ever, like, do something in your life or, like, think of something and then, like, that just brings some of your characters to mind and you can hear them doing it?
Once in a while, I'll come across a situation. I'm like, well, Nax would think that was funny. but more, it kind of goes the other way around. Like, I'll experience a situation or something, and I'll kind of take, like, the, you know, the emotional resonance or, like, whatever I'm going through for that, and I'll kind of pull that out and see how I can, like, totally twist it around to put it into a book.
Peyton.
Kind of bouncing off of that one, if your characters were here right now, what would their reaction be to, oh my gosh, we have a book?
I feel like Ryan would definitely be like preening. Yeah, boy, other than that, I feel like Case would probably be like in a corner somewhere going, okay. Boy, yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, Nax would be showboating, obviously, because he's Nax. What am I forgetting? Yeah, I mean, there's so many of them. Yeah.
Z
would be, like, refilling the drinks in the back and, like, making sure everybody has what they need and, like, just generally, like, smoothing the conversation along and being a cool person. Yeah.
How long did it take to write it?
There are many answers to that question. I did the first draft of this for National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo, back in 2014. So the first draft took a month. It was not a book at that point. It was like a pile of words that vaguely resembled a book. But,
beefy outline.
Yes, it was a beefy outline. A lot of the, like, final components were there, and a lot of the humor was already there, but, like, boy, it needed a lot of work. So it went through, like, two rounds of revision before Pitch Wars, and then we did Pitch Wars, and I did a round or two for that. And then I got the phone call from my agent, and it was a revise and resubmit. She was like...
I remember that.
Yes, yes.
It was a
whirlwind day. She emailed me at 10 in the morning, was like, send me the full manuscript. And then she emailed me, like, 4 hours later, and was like, we need to have a phone call at 5 o'clock. Today, and I was like, cool, I'll leave work early.
You emailed me about that.
Yeah. And then we sat on the phone for like an hour, and for 45 minutes of that hour, she was like, great, England, here's everything that's good about this book, here's everything I love, here is everything you need to fix. This is terrible. And I was like, okay. And then at the end of the phone call, she's like, all right, what are you thinking? How are you feeling? And I was like, what just happened? Like, she is like being hit by a bus. It is, but I love her. She's wonderful. Yeah, I would not trade her for anything. She is fierce. Yeah, so I did a big revision for her. Turned that back in. We signed, and then we sold the book not long after. And then, of course, we went into editorial, and I did two rounds of revision for one editor, and then I did, like, a round or two for another editor.
Did your first editor, like, leave mid-process?
I am on my third editor.
Well, I'm on my second. I had one leave after Rain was done, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one left Harper, one went to HMH Teen, and now I'm with Stephanie Stein, who I love. She's great.
I've heard good things.
Yes, yeah. All deserved. Any other questions? Yeah, Melissa.
Was your life as a reader at all different when you were seriously writing?
So different. So different. I can't read in print anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's really tragic, actually. Oh. Like, because there are books that aren't available as audiobooks that I just, like, have to let go. Like, I'm never going to be able to read this. Partially because I can't turn off editor brain. Like, I see text in front of me, and I'm like, well, let's rearrange the sentence, and, like, I wouldn't have said this way, and, like, you know, things just, like, get to me. But I also kind of have some attention issues that make it hard to focus on, like, long blocks of text. So once in a while, if it's, like, romance novels, I don't have as much a problem focusing on because they're so, like, fast and light, you know, I can just kind of get through them. But other than that, yeah, I unfortunately, my reading life has been kind of a casualty of my writing life, but I have managed to read like 103 books this year through audiobooks, 45-minute commute and audiobooks.
I love audiobooks.
They're
wow, that
so
is awesome.
Cool. Yes. Highly
bring
recommend
the story to life
audio.
A different way. Yeah, they're really cool.
Yeah. I'm so glad that The Disasters is an audio because I am such a, like, huge audiobook fan, and they mean so much to my life.
But we didn't get to talk about that at all. Did you get to... I'm jumping over the question really quick. Did you get to have any involvement in choosing your narrator?
I did, yes.
Awesome.
They sent me a list of 5 people that Harper works with sometimes, and I kind of eliminated one right away, and I listened to samples of the other 4.
Okay.
And one of them just immediately jumped out at me like, that's next.
Love it.
So,
that's
yeah, I have not listened to it because that's terrifying. But
I have not listened to the Rain one.
Yeah.
I won't do it.
I don't
Somebody
think I
else
do it.
Reading my words back to me, that's like my worst nightmare, except if I have to read my words, also scary.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I listen to my audiobooks on 1.5 times speed, so maybe if I have it sped up
there
like
you
that,
go. Okay.
That's also how I get through so many. Yeah. Yes.
What What voice did you write the book in?
Mm-hmm. It is in first person present tense, which I never thought I would write ever. I actually hated first person through most of my childhood and teen years and everything. I read one Star Wars book that was written in first person, and I was like, oh, maybe it's not so bad. And now, of course, in the YA landscape, there's a pretty, like, heavy, you know, group of first person novels. It's very, very common now. So it just, I think that level of immediacy really lends itself well to, like, a high adrenaline story.
Oh, same.
Yeah, Tristan.
Where can we find the audiobook?
You can find the audiobook wherever audiobooks are sold. it's on, I mean, you can download it from the Harper website. It's on Audible. It's on Libro.fm. Libro.fm is the independent bookstore version of Audible. So, like, support independent bookstores like Anne outside, who is wonderful. She's at Over the Moon, which is right across the street. Support indie bookstores. yes, smile.
Was there a point when, during your writing, where you felt like you hit, like, a wall and you got stuck?
Many times. I have gotten stuck many times. There have been many walls that I've bashed my head against. And really, like, I have to kind of take a step back and be like, what is the source of this block? Is it, like, mental health? And I need to just step away and take some time for me. Is it that I don't know where the story is going and I need to take some time and, you know, actually plan things out or, you know, regroup, go back to the last point at which I knew what was going right and see, like, where I went off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just motivation? Is it just like, I don't want to, that's hard, you know? Because it is hard, and it still is hard to, like,
it's
get the motivation up to write, you know? It's not that I don't love it, and I'm so glad this is part of my life, but also, like, yeah, it's hard. And
oh, anyone says it's easy, they're lying.
Oh, gosh, no. Yeah. I mean, I think V.E. Schwab recently said, like, you know, everybody who says, like, you have to absolutely be in love with writing or else why would you do it? She's like, no, that's not true at all.
No.
Writing is terrible, but, like, having written books is awesome.
Yes. Yes, to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm not quite to that extreme, but, yeah, writing is truly terrible sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's
but
great.
It's worth it. It's
it
worth
is.
It.
What was the hardest part of creating the culture or the technology of the world?
I really had to figure out, like, how Earth-like I wanted to be, and I really did not want to go so deep into, like, cloud computing or, like, where are we currently going as a species? Like, honestly, by the year 2194, where this is set, the technology is going to be way beyond what's in this book. This is not, like, an accurate representation, necessarily, of our future. But the way I centered the technology in this book is on the A-Drive technology, which is the technology that lets them quickly hop between worlds, was sort of, you know, sort of a lightning discovery in about 2050-ish. And I feel like that would be a total disruption to everything. You know, governments would drop everything and be like, we got to get on this. You know, so many resources would be turned to that kind of development. So I kind of just, like, pivoted the whole world's focus. So instead of, like, focusing on cloud computing and on, you know, smartphones and everything like that, like, we're really going to sort of shift. And I just didn't want to get into, like, AI and things like that. Like, that's just not what I find interesting. And if I don't find it interesting, I'm just going to, like,
no Cylons?
Write it out of the book. There are no Cylons.
No Cylons? Okay.
Yes, there are no Cylons.
That's fine. They're scary.
Yes, Cylons are scary. Yes.
So you mentioned that Guardians of the Galaxy and Star Wars, like, inspired you, but, like, what are your other, like, favorite sci-fi books and movies?
So many. I love Firefly. Babylon 5, I will go to my grave defending Babylon 5. Look, I know it's, like, love you, Dave. I know that, like, if you watch it now, it is so, like, campy 90s CG. It's painful to look at. Like, please stick it out, people. Like, the characters are so wonderful. And, like, I will die for my Queen Ivanova. She is wonderful. So watch Babylon 5. Stargate SG-1 is amazing.
I love Stargate
so much.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Matter is an excellent television show that was on.
Dark Matter
and Killjoys. I think that also
Killjoys.
We were talking about in our emails.
Dutch,
like,
is my
way back
queen.
When.
Oh my goodness.
So there's so much good out there to experience.
Yes.
And also I highly recommend going back and reading some of the old Star Wars. They're Legends novels now.
I love the New Jedi Order. I loved a lot of the, like,
yeah, the New Jedi Order is interesting.
Yeah.
I really loved the X-Wing Rogue Squadron series.
Because, yeah,
like, honestly, Star Wars, like, I could take or leave the Jedi. I don't really care about that so
yeah.
much. Like, like, give me the pilots and
I like the alien invasion
and, like,
stuff.
You know, all of that
cool.
stuff. Well, then, yeah, New Jedi Order was definitely
mm-hmm,
it for
that
you.
That was my jam.
Yeah. Other questions? Yes. Mackenzie?
Where would you say you get inspiration from the most?
Where do I get inspiration from the most? I think really you kind of have to refill the creative well. Like, you can't just always be, like, putting stuff out. You also have to consume media. So mm-hmm. you have to watch TV and watch movies and read other books and things like that. And,
yeah.
you know, it's not even so much that you're, like, copying what you see. It's like you'll see something and that'll trigger an idea. Like, oh, well, that's interesting. But what if this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just kind of off to the races from there.
You know, what was one of your strategies for getting unstuck when you got stuck when writing?
I am a real verbal processor. Sorry, Lee. yes. I have to talk things out. I cannot figure things out just staring at my computer screen. So if you can have a trusted friend or writing partner or somebody that you can just talk things out with, that helps me immensely. I can't work without it. Let's do just a couple more questions, I think. Asha.
Is there any, like, specific, like, characteristics of any of your teens that you incorporate into either this or either the disasters or your next book?
Not really specifically. Like, I try not to, like, wholesale pull people from real life, because I don't think that's fair to people. But once in a while, I might take, like, a little phrase, or I'll take a name, or I'll take, you know, just somebody's, like, sort of general, like, impression that I get from them or something, and that'll make its way into the book. Haley has a question.
Can you tell us a little bit about your upcoming for 2020?
I can tell you a very little bit. I really like the title. I can't wait till we release it. But it is a kind of sci-fi fantasy mashup, which I've been wanting
cool.
to do for a long time. It's a futuristic world. It really feels more futuristic than the disasters to me. But there is no space travel or anything like that. But it also has magic, like a very sort of science approach to magic, kind of like in the Grishaverse, the, you know, sort of Six of Crows and the Smoke and Shadow and Bone, the Grisha trilogy,
yeah.
the Grisha trilogy, whatever. Leigh Bardugo, my queen. Yeah, the, you know, the approach to magic in those books is very sort of, like, precise and scientific. So I've kind of brought something like that in. There's sort of a periodic table of magic in there. But it is definitely another, like, found family, snarky humor, you know, on the run from the law kind of thing. I don't know why that's a theme in my books, but, like, let's not psychoanalyze me.
I'm sold.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. I really can't wait to share it with you. Yes, in the back. Dominic.
If you could pick, like, a theme song for your book, what would it be?
Ooh.
Okay. I actually have an answer for this because somebody asked me this recently. So there are two that I would pick. One is a song by The Prodigy, because I love The Prodigy, don't judge me. And it is called Spitfire, because, like, what more perfect song for, like, an awesome pilot? So there's, like, no words to this song, but it's amazing. And the other one is a song by a little, like, local band from Washington, D.C., and they're called All the Best Kids. And as a band, they just have, like, a really positive ethos. Like, they're all about, like, radical inclusiveness and love and, like, positivity. And one of their songs, Breakthrough, I think, is it's on the Disasters playlist. Not the edited version for today, but, like, the actual one. And it's just it's a really great song about, you know, wherever you go, like, you take yourself with you. So, like, whoever you are as a person, you know, you've always kind of got your own back. And I'm not explaining it very well, but, like, listen to the song. It's a great song. Anyway, listen to All the Best Kids. They're awesome. Yes.
Honestly, there's two songs that would probably incorporate, or that would, like, could, like, represent Nax very well. Like, no, that's, like, his personality. That's not a spoiler. Like, two songs that, like, I don't know if you've heard them, but there one is, I lost it. Hey, Look, Ma, I Made It by Panic at the Disco. Because I feel like he would be dancing to that, and he'd be like, hey, look, Ma, I made it. And then, Positive the People Pumped Up Kicks, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of,
I should have put that on the playlist. Yeah.
It's a good one.
It's a living list. I can add to it. That's fine. All right. I think we should probably cut it off there. Yes. I mean, we're pretty much at 7:30. So any last words?
just congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm so excited for you.
The launch party was a lot of fun and very exciting. We are glad that we got to host that at the Crozet Library. Thrilled to have so many people come out and excited to be able to share it with you right now. We'll put links in the show notes to request a copy of the book, as well as books by author Sarah Glenn Marsh. And we look forward to hearing what you thought of the book once you get a chance to read it. As always, a big thank you to the Friends of the Library who make this podcast, as well as our library events, possible. To find out more about the Friends of the Library or join the Friends, you can do so at jmrlfriends.org, and I'll also include that link in our show notes. That's all that we've got for you today. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So thank you for tuning in, and we're glad to be on the same page.